You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Savage Arms and the new 110 Ultralight. At about 6 pounds, the 110 Ultralight is designed to combat elevation and the elements while maintaining the performance of a factory blueprinted Savage 110 action. The carbon fiber wrapped stainless steel barrel makes it durable and lightweight. The rifle comes equipped with the Savage AccuFit technology, so that means it's adjustable and it comes in a variety of calibers. The 308, the 270, the 28 Nosler, the 280 Ackley Improved, the 30-06, and much more. If you want to find out more information about the 110 Ultralight, visit savagearms.com.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and I'm the host of the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. I'll also be your host into the world of hunting, the icon of North American wilderness, the bear. We'll talk about tactics, gear, conservation, but we'll also bring you into some of the wildest country on the planet, chasing bear.
We're up in northeast Montana this week, and we're at elk camp. We've been chasing elk. Our legs are tired. But at the end of the week, we sat down with Ben O'Brien from Meat Eaters Hunting Collective and Joe Farinato from Peterson's Hunting and our new friend Bryce Suhey and Bear John Newcomb, my son, and Colby the Bear Tech Moorhead. And we have a really fun conversation about our week of elk hunting in the Missouri Breaks. We talk about some of the tactics we used, and but also just kind of the general, some general commentary on elk hunting, and I am yet to determine if I like elk hunting or not. We'll see. You can see. Hey, be sure to check out our buddies at CVA Muzzleloaders. If you're going to be muzzleloading this fall and you're looking to upgrade your equipment, check out CVA. They have an incredible guarantee on all their muzzleloaders. Pretty much, they have a money-back guarantee. If you save your receipt, you need to read their website to get all the specifics. And if it's inside of about a two-week time window from when you buy it, if you don't like it, if it doesn't shoot like you think it should, you can send it back. They'll give you your money back. I tell you, I'll translate that for you. These are good muzzleloaders, best on the market. They stand behind their product. And of all the hunts I've got left this fall, I'm most looking forward to the Arkansas muzzleloader season, and I'm going to be carrying a CVA. Also, our buddies, man, not even our buddies, but Buddy Woodbury. I'm throwing around the buddy word. Our buddies at W Hunting Supply. And Buddy Woodbury and his team, they are the hound supply company that you need to be using for all of your dog-related needs, whether it's Garmin's, whether it's leashes and collars, whether it's any. They've got many other kinds of tracking devices. And it doesn't have to be for hounds or even hunting dogs. Anything that you need for your dogs, you can get from our buddies at W Hunting Supply. These guys are fighting the good fight for houndsmen. They're more than just a hound company. They're really dedicated. They're our people, and show them some support. Lastly, check out our buddies at Northwoods Bear Products. We're baiting bears right now. Season in Arkansas is about to open up, and we've been using Gold Rush fryer grease additive. We've been using the Gold Dust, which is their powder. It comes in almost like a big salt shaker type container and is sweeter than sugar, and you put it on your bait. They've got a whole lot of commercial scents. If you're baiting bears, it makes zero sense to not use commercial scents, and I'm not just saying that. I've been using Northwoods Bear products for many, many years. It's going to make your baits be more effective, draw in more bears, and that's the key to success when baiting bears. More bears, the better, and you're going to get them there from scent. Check out our buddies at Northwoods Bear Products. I hold in my right hand Broken Dreams. I've got a You would call this a whale tail of an elk horn. Is that right?
Yep.
Well, describe that, Joe.
It is the beautiful top point of what I would assume is a six-point bull with the six-point, and then that main beam just tails out.
Now, is that the main beam or is that the main beam?
You know, I was holding it earlier trying to determine which one. I would guess that this is the main beam just because of the waviness of it.
And it hooks in.
And it kind of hooks back in, and then this is your point coming off.
So this is the back section of an elk antler. And yeah. Bear and I'm going to get to the introductions of who is all here, but I don't want anyone to be confused about what's happened the last 7 days. Broken dreams, boys. Now, Bear and I found this. This was where some elk were presumably fighting. Broke off. This is fresh.
And, super fresh.
We brought this home just the other day. But now we're in Montana. We're in the Missouri Breaks of Montana. And, hey, it is awesome to have all you guys. We've got Ben O'Brien.
Yes, sir.
Ben, we've known each other for a couple years, I guess.
That's right.
But this is the first time we've really spent a lot of time together.
Yeah, it's good.
And we've been in camp now for four. I guess you've been here for 4 or 5 days.
4 days, yeah.
We've been here for
seven days.
Yeah. So Ben O'Brien, and everybody would know Ben from the Hunting Collective. Colby the Bear Tech Moorhead. He's Repeat. Always back there.
Yeah.
I didn't know his nickname was the Bear Tech.
Yeah.
I like
yeah.
that.
The, yeah. the people named him that.
The people did.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah.
I was thinking Bear Greaser, but Bear Tech.
Greaser.
The Bear Tech.
The Greaser just
and
makes
then we've
smooth.
Got
yeah.
Bryce.
No
Suhaim.
Name.
Oh,
Bryce,
yeah.
no name.
Man. So Bryce, I should introduce Joe before I introduce you because I know you because of Joe. But no, Bryce Suhaim, we got to start off with this joke. So, well, hold on. We're coming to you last.
All right.
Got Joe Farinato here to my right.
Yep, that's
and
me.
Joe, this is Joe's camp. Joe's the one that hooked it, told us all kind of where to put in.
I'm the one who gar-holed y'all.
Yes, you are also the one who gar-holed us up in the Missouri Breaks. No, so, Joe, you work for Peterson's Hunting.
Yes, sir.
That's a new job for you.
This is a new job. So I used to work with old Ben O'Brien.
That's yeah. We're now foes. We were friends.
Yeah, that's why we're sitting across from each other.
Yeah, yeah. So you're the. What do you do for Peterson's?
I'm the associate editor.
Associate editor, Peterson's Hunting Magazine.
Yep.
Awesome. We may come back to that.
Okay.
It's
a good thing to come.
So
back
So I.
To.
We're still on introductions here, so I knew Bryce because of that. These guys couldn't come right away, so Ben and Joe couldn't come. Joe just said, hey, my buddy Bryce is coming. He's going to be there Tuesday.
He has no last name.
Just my buddy Bryce. And then so he gives you my phone number, I think.
Yep.
I get a message from just random phone number, and it's like, hey, when are you coming into camp? And so we just start communicating like we're just like we've known each other forever. Then we meet up at camp, like way out in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
And for like two full days, we're just buddying around. And Bryce is a way more experienced elk hunter than me and Colby and Bear.
True story.
And he's a good elk hunter. And, I mean, he's got a game plan. He's telling us what he thinks we should do. All very much appreciated stuff. And at one point, we were moving camp
mm-hmm.
on Bryce's
Word.
Suggestion. And Colby said, Clay, we don't even know Bryce's name. we're doing everything he says. Which turned out to be great, Bryce.
Yeah.
So, Bryce Suhaim. Say hey. Say hi, Bryce.
Hello.
Hi, Bryce. Now, you're a physician's assistant in Bozeman, Montana.
I am. Work at the urgent care in town
yeah.
there.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. And a houndsman?
I am, yep.
Yeah.
Newer into that, but it's been a lot of fun chasing cats and running hound dogs.
Right on. Right on. Well, Ben, describe...
Wait. Don't forget.
Oh, sorry, buddy. Bear John Newcomb.
Yep.
Say hello.
Hello.
Bear is my 14-year-old son. He got to skip week and a half of school... to come down here. He had to guarantee me that he was going to be very diligent in his studies to get caught up and stuff. So he guaranteed me he could do that. So we let him come. He's kind of been the camp assistant. He's a good hand on mules. He's good at just doing what you tell him. Doesn't cause much trouble. So
that's right.
This is your first time on the podcast, though.
No, we
turkey camp.
Turkey camp and last year elk hunt.
Okay. Yep, you're right. You've been on here a bunch. Yep, it's true.
He made his own knife, he said, with his grandfather. He showed it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a handy boy.
I know a lot of 30-year-old men that have made a knife in their lives. So.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got a cool grandpa, too. He's a knife maker. Very cool. Ben, me and you have been hunting together some the last couple of days. Mm-hmm. You did the same thing to me earlier today. Describe kind of the Missouri breaks and kind of the hunting. Because what I didn't know was, like, is this a good area? Is this an average area? Is this a
bad area? No one should come here ever. Yeah. Oh, it's terrible.
This particular area, no one should ever come. But to the breaks, go for
actually,
it.
That's true.
They only have 7x7s here.
Yeah, apparently.
I haven't seen a raghorn yet. It's only been giant elk. But no, this, like you said on my podcast a little bit ago that we recorded, it's broken country. You know, we're used to big head walls and canyons and
thick timber.
Big timber, and where we're at in Bozeman there in southeast Montana, and this country's broken. It has like islands of good elk country. You know, we look into this landscape and there'll be a sagebrush sea and then a little creek bottom, and then you'll have some ridges that have fingers. You know, we said earlier, if you hold your hand out, just hold your hand out and point it south. If you spread your fingers out, you can kind of picture a lot of what you're doing here. If your arm is the ridge, you walk across the ridge, then each one of your fingers is a little finger ridge that goes down into a drainage, and that's a lot of the country that you are hunting here. And while it's a good elk country, it just seems to have pockets or little areas that seem to be a good elk country in what can be huge canyon walls, and we've seen.
So it's, some of it's real open, but then there's a lot of these. There'll be small pockets of timber.
Yeah. Yeah, and the timber is what attracts them. The cover, their edge animals like deer or anything else, so that's what attracts them for bedding and for just general living quarters. And that's what this is. And you're oftentimes up on a high point glassing and or probably more often just walking these spine of these ridges, top of these ridges, and walking down the fingers and trying to locate elk, sometimes down in the drainages, sometimes off across
on a bench. It's today's September the 20th, which would – Joe, would that be like classic elk rut bugle time? I mean,
it changes everywhere you go, right? Like different elk in different parts of the world or country will rut at different times. But according to what I've heard out here, this is super late for this year. Like for them not to be rutting, this would be kind of like the tail end of the peak rut right now. Last week was supposed to be the time.
Hmm.
Type of thing.
So, but it hasn't been.
Hasn't been at all. I mean, we've definitely heard some bugles, definitely seen some bulls running around, but it hasn't seemed like there's been a lot of hot cows, and there haven't been, you know, all those bulls running around crazy like there.
You know, the other day from our camp, before we left, we heard a lot of elk bugles. If you had told me that, if you had said, Clay, from your camp, you're going to be able to hear elk bugle. I would have just been like, give us a couple of days and we'll have them killed. And I've never killed an elk before, so that's pretty bold of me to think that. But that's what I would have thought. I just would have thought, if we're hearing them bugle and they're that close to us, this is something that we can attain.
Mm-hmm.
But why haven't we been able to kill one?
Because we don't have any of those dumb raghorns. They're only big 7x7s that are super smart.
And I'm good at missing those big 7x7s.
You did miss one the second day.
Second day, shot just under him. Biggest bull I've ever seen.
But it just has to do with the country we're hunting. The way everything's so broken, and this timber, you're never going to see embedded in it because they go to these timbered up areas that are super dark, have great thermal cover. It's really comfortable for them, and you know you're never going to see them when they're bedded. So you have really a narrow window of opportunity when moving from water to bedding areas to feeding areas, things like that. And since there aren't these bulls just roaming hills going crazy looking for cows right now, it's a little bit harder to get on them.
Now, so that's what you'd be taking advantage of. Because, I mean, where you are from, Ben,
it's like almost 100% timber. Am I right? Or is it pretty? There's
open
some
meadows.
Open.
There's open meadows.
It's big open meadows.
But when you're up on the high country, it's mostly timber. You know,
but it's
depending
the
where you are.
It's the same game. Elk moving from water to feed, and you're trying to capitalize on the elk rut where these elk are.
Yeah, this is no different. It is very much activity. Yeah, it's very much no different than whitetails. I mean, and it's in the description of kind of how it sets up because they're crepuscular, right? They move at dawn and dusk. With whitetails in the early season, you're hunting them bed to feed, feed to bed to feed, right? You're cutting them off. You're trying to be in a place where they want to be, right? By the food or by the bedding, generally by the food. And then when the rut comes in, you just need to be in the woods and be in a travel corridor, generally where does are going to hang out or something like that. It's not so dissimilar here, although elk, you know, really treat these mountains a lot differently than a whitetail treat, you know, somebody's farm in the Midwest. But you are hunting them in the early season, bed to feed, feed to bed, and you're trying to get to a wallow, you're trying to understand where they're moving. And early, you know, this is what, 3 weeks into the season, and early season they're not as receptive to calling, but you still call anyway to locate them, to figure out where they are and see if you can get one to play. And that's where the raghorns come in. You just need one silly raghorn, just like one fired up tom if you're turkey hunting. Same idea, but then when the rut comes in, you just got to be out here, and you got to be vocal, and you got to be on the mountain, putting boots where as many places you possibly can. You know?
What do you think about these guys that tell us that you can't call elk out here? Like,
I've heard that from half a dozen.
Did they
people.
Say that everywhere though?
No, that's.
I mean, they say that
here.
In Colorado, where there's a hunter on every ridge, literally.
Joe's first day out, he called in a 6x6 to 30 yards, just had a tree in the way.
Yeah.
And that bull had no cows with it by itself. He came in pretty hot.
Yeah, the way.
How
it was,
far did he come from?
We just heard crashing from the bottom. I'm guessing he was bedded in that north facing timber, and
he came in hot. We were pursuing another bull. Yeah. No, I bugled.
We were going
time.
After a 7x7 with what, 6 cows,
mm-hmm.
who had just crossed that ridge. We didn't know he crossed the ridge yet. We still thought he was in the bottom, and then Joe bugled, and we heard crashing in the timber, assuming it was that 7 with cows, and it was a lone 6 who was probably bigger than that 7.
Mm-hmm. He was really big. But like the whole thought process there with calling, I think you'll hear a lot of people say you can't call elk in certain places. I think it's a lot to do with not knowing proper calling techniques and stuff, because if you get the right calls and you talk like you're an elk, like you're going to be able to call them pretty much wherever you are. People say calling's less effective out here. Because lots of the places you're hunting in the breaks, I would presume are more open, and the visual cues of elk, like you're never going to call a big bull across an open meadow just because he can't see the cow making the noise or the bull making the noise. And he's going to be like, oh, that's weird, and walk the other way.
Yeah.
But like out here, when we were pursuing that 7x7, like we ran up the ridge, we went up as fast as we could. We were trying to bulldog him, get in his grill with his cows, scream at him like, I'm a big angry bull, it's going to steal his cows, and he's going to come in to face off. And what happened there is, like, we already missed him. Like, he already got over the ridge, but I still called assuming he was below us, and then that other big 6x6 was, like, you know, right in there, and we got pretty lucky in that circumstance, but he came crashing right into that call.
Yeah.
And if the wind hadn't switched, that bull would have been 100% dead.
That's the other thing out here is, you know, we say there's just a bunch of finger ridges, but every ridge has so many different pockets and different terrain. And so on the same ridge, you might have wind work in 5 different directions. And it's not that it's swirling, but 10 yards down the ridge, it has its own thermal pattern.
Exactly, because so the ridge switches directions.
Learning the thermal patterns in here was tough.
I don't think you can really learn
tough.
Them.
No.
As much as you can look at the topographical map and be like, it's going to go.
I think you could get lucky.
as our friend Chase Durden said, you just got to charge through the bad wind and get to the good wind. And that's not a bad strategy here. I mean, it's got its own idiosyncrasies in the way that you would hunt a place like this. And I think people are right. It is a visual. These elk might be more visual creatures because they can see more, because they have that ability and they hang out. Mm-hmm. In this more sparsely timbered and open country. But that doesn't eliminate calling. It just makes it a little bit of a different dynamic. And at the same time, I don't know how many people hunt the breaks. We haven't seen that many hunters in the last 3 days. But elk in accessible places like the one we're in get hunted a lot anyway, no matter where they are in the state of Montana or any state, Colorado, Wyoming, they're going to get hunted in accessible places. So I get what folks are saying, that these elk just are a little bit different, and they do seem to be different than other elk that I've encountered in the way that they move and act. But you know, calling is that's a hunter versus elk thing always, and if the elk's receptive and the hunter's good at calling, yeah, make it work.
I think a lot of people might be saying you can't call out here too, saying like, leave the hoochie mama at home. Yeah. Like, you can't come out and blow on any sort of call, and yeah, they just come running. Like in some places where elk are just conditioned to,
where,
you know,
where
any
is
sort
that
of cow
place
sound.
That's where I want to go.
You know, I haven't found it, but I've seen it on TV.
Joe, is what's your favorite bow hunt? I mean, is elk hunting your favorite thing?
It's definitely one of my favorites. I mean, I would take all of September off if I could every year.
What's your favorite hunt? My
favorite hunt. I honestly, it's so hard. My favorite species, if
so
I could
you've
hunt
already
one species
me.
For the rest of my life, it'd be bighorn sheep.
Have you ever hunted bighorn sheep?
I haven't, but I want to.
Okay.
But that is definitely
how
my
do you
favorite
know you'd
game
like it,
species.
Joe? I'm just kidding.
I don't know if I would like it.
Hey,
but
we saw bighorn sheep.
The allure of hunting bighorn sheep just is...
Yeah, we saw two giant bighorn rams.
Yeah,
Joe said this is worth everything just to see.
So I was like, I would hike down here 1,000 times.
Yeah. I said, man, I've been in camp where sheep hunting occurred, and I've been around when other people are sheep hunting, and it just seemed to... It doesn't get me that way. It seems boring to me. Sheep seem... Compared to a giant forest horse that's running around bugling, trying to knock stuff over... Sheep seem like a docile, bedded creature that are stuck up high in the mountains and can't get down.
Here, you're leaning into what I'm trying to get to, which is I haven't decided if I like elk hunting or not. And I'm kind of being serious.
It's frustrating.
It's really frustrating.
It's you know, there's some hunts that if you play your game right, which is a whole lot of work, you have. It's like if you do these things, you'll be successful. And now those things might be really, really hard. Elk hunting has that same thing. If you do these things, you'll be successful. But those things are so variable and are so difficult if you don't live in elk country. And Ben and I have been talking about kind of the transient hunter. Like, it's really hard to go somewhere for 7 days and kill an elk, or really to kill anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to do a whole lot of things right. Mm-hmm. And that's the fun part of it. That's the challenging part of it. But it's also the hard part of it. And, you know, like back in Arkansas, anything that I hunt locally, you know, I've kind of got it dialed in. And I can go certain days and not go another day, or take off 3 days here and go. And that's such an advantage to doing what we did, well, what all of us did on this hunt, which is just bomb out somewhere for 7 days. And then, you know, if the elk aren't bugling, or if these certain factors aren't there, then it's just, I'm being sarcastic when I, hyperbolic. I'm exaggerating to make a point that it's just tough. What's your favorite thing to hunt, Ben? And I'm going to end up with y'all trying to convince me to be an elk hunter, because I've hunted 2 years and it's done this to me. I'm holding up the broken, the broken point.
Broken dreams.
It's
the whale tail of broken dreams.
This antler is basically Clay Newcomb's spirit.
It looks like a middle finger if you look at it the right way. Turkeys is the answer.
Okay.
And it's not close. But elk are like moving towards the top, you know. Okay. Are definitely number two.
Well, they've got some similarities.
Yeah,
really. Other than you like big game more than elk. Turkey hunting.
What's that now? Yeah. You said you like sheep more than elk. They don't even do anything, Joe. They sit around.
Have you ever been in the mountains and heard rams butt heads?
Yeah, I've seen it.
The crack is amazing.
Yeah, they do that like once every 8 years. Like,
that's cool.
They're just stuck up there and they can't
and the
get down.
The country's really cool.
Yeah, that's the reason people like them, because they live in cool country, but they can't get down. They're stuck up there. They're lazy. They barely even move. You know, like,
Most of them are
blind in one eye. Like, they can't.
Hey, I like where you're to a sheep hunt would be a slower paced hunt. Mm-hmm. It would be more like strategy and trying to find, as opposed to just like run and gun. If you could distill it down to that, something that simple.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's what I like about spring bear hunting, is it's like you may only see one bear the whole week, but and you're not going to be chasing bear every day. But actually, that's what I enjoy about it. So, like,
you know, the sheep hunting, the way I would describe sheep hunting, not that I'm not, that I wouldn't go if you guys offer me a trip, I would definitely go. But I just think he's like, here's sheep hunting that in my experience with other folks doing it. Climb, climb, climb. This is, it's amazing country. It's hard to get there. We finally crest the summit. We look around. We find a sheep we can actually kill. And then we walk over there and shoot it while it's munching some grass. Like the actual hunting of the animal is only difficult because of the country that it lives in. And of course they have great vision, sense of smell and all that, like everything else. It is kind of a do or die hunt, and I'm talking about a hunt I've never done, so you take that for
with both of you guys are talking about hunts you've never done.
Yeah, but it's like hunts we've dreamed of. And yeah.
There's a lot of an elk hunt is kind of like pizza. Mm-hmm. Okay, like think about the attitude you'd be in if you were like, you know what, tonight we're getting pizza. You would kind of be like, kind of like exciting, mm-hmm. Variety. Mm-hmm. And like a bighorn sheep hunt would be like, you know what? We're going out to, help me, Joe. Help
Ruth's
me with this
Chris Steakhouse.
Yeah.
We're gonna get all dressed up.
Great.
Yeah,
we're all both of them are great.
All dressed up for a lesser experience.
Bryce, what's your favorite thing to hunt?
Oh man, I think if you were to tell me right now, there's a bugling bull over the ridge or a fresh cat track, I think I'd be dumping dogs on that cat track.
Really?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. But outside that, mule deer, I love watching mule deer in the rut. To me, that's one of my favorite things to get after and watch. I think it's more a little bit more of an exciting hunt rather than just, you know, your first light and last light.
Okay, because you're able to stalk the animals during the day when they're bedded because you can see them and find them?
Yeah, just a little bit more patternable, and I think you get to see a lot more animals. But, yeah, probably mule deer or chasing cats.
Nice. Bear, favorite species?
I would say turkeys if we had more of them, but I've only been on, like, one turkey.
Yeah.
For real. But I think probably squirrel hunting.
Squirrel hunting.
Yes.
Right here, buddy.
Yep. You've raised this child correctly.
Okay.
He's not a child.
Now,
a young
I'm kind of teeing you up for this. With dogs or without dogs?
With dogs, for sure.
That's a dumb question. See that full elk horn? We also have a full set of sheds. That elk horn represents your spirit right now while you're talking about squirrel hunting. Full. This is broken because of elk hunting. Colby.
We'll put you back together.
Favorite species?
I don't know. I mean, for me, it's all like it changes with seasons. I know growing up, it was like hog hunting or duck hunting.
Colby came from East Texas, so they were big into
whitetail
and hog hunting and stuff.
Yeah. I'm really enjoying bear hunting, especially like the stuff with mules in Montana. Like that was a really fun hunt.
Yeah.
A spring bear, not like haven't been as happy with fall bear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when we go back to Arkansas, we're coming up on like the pinnacle of our year, which is the opening of the Arkansas bear season. And I'll tell you guys a little story or a little scenario that's been happening while we were here. So my buddy, James Lawrence, he's 72. James is 72. And me and him are like, we're like best buddies, bear hunting buddies. He lives in some really good country. And he lives in good bear country. He knew that I was going to be on this hunt, so he's been baiting bears for me. And he actually rented a cabin down where we hunt for my whole family to come stay this upcoming weekend to bear hunt. And while we were gone, my daughter and other son on their own accord drove 2 hours down to where we hunt to go bait bears with James. So I thought that was pretty cool that my 17-year-old daughter, she worked hard for it too. Her mom, there was some logistical challenges. And so, but she ended up driving all the way down there and spent the whole day with James baiting bears along with my younger son. So we're getting pumped for this weekend for bear camp, fall bear camp.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun, man. We have some good bears too. But if I were to pick my favorite species, you know, bear would have to be up there at the top, but whitetail. I mean, I grew up whitetail hunting, and that was all we did, whitetails and, you know, small game and stuff. You know, elk hunting is it's such a glamorous animal. I mean, there's no denying, like, and that's why I'm here. It's a spectacular beast, man. I mean, this, you know, like Ben's called it the forest horse, you know, but the vocalizations they make, the places they live, the antler structure, I mean, how good the meat is. I mean, it's an incredible beast, no doubt. And the media has glamorized elk hunting so much that us poor Southern boys come up here and try to kill elk. And it's tough. They didn't tell me, Joe.
It's a tough hunt.
But when it comes together, all comes together, it's pretty special.
Well, listen, you just said it. I'm monologuing here, but that's what's messed up about this whole deal. Elk hunting stinks.
It's true.
For such a long period of time that when you kill one, it's really great. I can foresee that. Like, if I killed one, I would be like, I love elk hunting more than anything in the world. But it's only great because of how bad it was. Now, tell me how that works, Joe. I mean, for real. If it was easy, then so something is great because of how bad it was.
You suffer.
Yeah, because it's the suffering. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like going on a nasty trip. Same like climbing Mount Everest. You know, it's not fun while you're doing it, but you look back and you're like, oh man, that was amazing. And I always kind of model my life when I'm doing stuff like that. It's like, if I'm going to go climb a mountain, might as well go climb Everest. So why come do something easy? Go give yourself that challenge, and it'll be a more memorable experience.
How much respect would you have for elk if you drove all the way out here from Arkansas, get to camp, get out of your pickup, grab your bow, and shoot an elk? Then you'd be like, man, these animals are the easiest things to hunt ever.
Then it'd just be grocery shopping.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know. It's that way with every hunt. You know, the amount of work you put into it is what gives it value. Yeah. And I understand that.
Like, even though we haven't, you know, I mean, I think this has been a great hunt. We've had bulls every day bugling.
Y'all tell me why it's been a great hunt. Go.
Man, me and Joe are on bulls.
Man, bulls bugling every day. Big bulls running around. I've never been to a place where I've seen so many big bulls.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen a lot of big bulls in my past few elk seasons, but never all at the same time in the same place.
Yeah.
Like, I might see one, you know, really big 350 bull once a season. You're like, wow, that was a big bull. But, I mean, every bull we've seen out here, besides one that I can think of, went over 350. Like, there is no doubt in my mind that every single bull that I have laid eyes on, besides the one that we jumped at 5 yards,
that you should have shot.
That I should have shot.
Yeah. You should not have taken Bryce's head.
Through my head.
I should have shot through his head.
We're going to have to get to our Bryce-isms later, okay?
You should never take my health and safety before an elk's.
But, I mean, like, every bull, besides that one, have just been absolutely huge. I mean, the first morning I got here, we run out. Send you guys after a bugle. Bryce and I take off chasing another bugle, which is already, like, that's a great day right there.
Yeah.
You know, you got two different bulls bugling.
You're choosing what bugles you're going to run after when it's not even shooting light yet, right out of camp. That's pretty good.
So that was great. And, I mean, we take off. We run over ridges, literally run over ridges. And then all of a sudden, like, we jump two spikes in the bottom, so we slow down for a minute. And we're like, man, it wasn't those spikes bugling. Like, there's no way. And we see one of the spikes let out a bugle, like, just does the wimpy little bugle. And I was like, yeah, it definitely wasn't them trying to. And all of a sudden, we hear this big bugle, and Bryce and I both look at each other like, that wasn't the spike.
Yeah.
And coming over the ridge is just, there's this little funnel of five cows and this massive dinosaur. 7x7 just screaming behind him, just letting it all out. And I just see antlers coming over the ridge. And I'm like, well, it's a big bull. It's a really big bull. And then the whole hunt just, like, was modeled after that. Every time I laid eyes on bulls, like, they were just huge.
Well, that was a joke before you guys got here. That, you know, the first day we were in a different area, I moved spots to see if we couldn't get on more elk. And, man, right away, I'm on one of the biggest bulls I've ever seen. miss him. But the next morning, get up, bulls bugling everywhere. Get on a, I was a little bit behind another 7x7 and his cows, and kind of just crept and followed them all the way up the mountain. Next thing you know, I'm, 80 yards from them, and my wind had been good the whole time, and snuck in to make my kind of my final approach, and they blew out pretty hard because wind switched in their little thermal pattern. But then the next bull after that I saw was another 7x7, and the first four bulls I seen were all sevens. And that was kind of the joke, was that, man, I think they only have 7x7s in this basin.
We need some little ones, man.
Yeah. That's one thing we were saying, like, what kind of elk hunting is this? I said, it's hard. It's harder maybe than others, easier than some. However, I haven't hunted all the elk in all of places, but this definitely, the reward would be bigger here than most places. Like, you have the opportunity to kill a giant elk here, where we are sitting right now, which no one will ever know about, but it's tough hunting. But if you could figure them out and get lucky,
well, see, hearing you guys say this is, it's calibrating me, because this is my second hunt. Bear and I went to Colorado last year, just 3 weeks before season. Decided we were going to be elk hunters. Never blown an elk call. Picked up a bugle call from, or a bugle tube from Phelps, and some diaphragm calls, and I was a pretty good turkey caller, so the diaphragm worked pretty good for me. We bombed out to, a guy just said, go here, a pretty good elk hunter, just said general area. He just said, go to this spot, and you ought to find elk. I said, okay. We went out there, elk hunted. We were only there 4.5 days, but we ended up finding some elk, had one encounter with two raghorn bulls, called them in, ended up passing them. Everybody's heard this story. We ended up passing them because we thought they weren't legal. Turns out they were legal. So had missed opportunity. But other than that, I've had this is only my second time elk hunting. So it helps me to hear you guys talk about how great this is. And obviously I'm joking about, not liking elk hunting. But the one thing that is, and this is probably something that like new hunters would experience, and I would be new into this world, is after you've done something and been successful multiple times in multiple places over multiple years, you begin to have this like equation inside of you that this much work will usually equate to success, and you can bank on that. So in all that work, I mean, that's the way it is with my whitetail hunting, with my bear hunting, with my squirrel hunting, with my training coon dogs. It's like, if I just put this time in, it's going to end up fruitful. I don't know that equation yet with elk. I've got one piece from last year when Bear and I hunted. I've got a new piece that I hoped would be the piece that would put some elk in my freezer. And we've still got a day left, so it may yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out this puzzle might be bigger than I thought, boys. Might need more pieces. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, it might be a 1,000-piece puzzle, man. I don't know.
No, I'm not sure. I don't have 1,000 elk hunts, Ben.
Well, here's what happens: is sometimes you're looking at trying to put this puzzle together, and you walk out in the woods, you make a sound, the elk comes running, you shoot it, and it seems like the easiest thing in the world. Now, everybody who's listening to this, who's ever turkey hunted, will understand what I'm talking about, because if you get some swamp gobbler that's stuck back in some swamp in Louisiana, or probably in Arkansas, or in a place where he's not going to do what you want him to do, you have to have the next level of experience to know what to do when you're presented with an animal that's wary of your
So you think
activities.
I'm learning stuff that's going to help me with the next puzzle piece?
Absolutely. And like I said, I had a friend, co-worker this year who just walked out on a ridge and went meow, meow, and the elk ran in and shot it, and then it was over. I had just been on that ridge 3 hours prior doing the same noise in the same exact way he was. And so the fact that he killed that,
he should split that elk with you.
Yeah. I pretty much called it half of the way in, and then he brought it the rest of the way. So I told him, I said, that is just you being there and that elk being there.
And see,
at the right time. And I'd hunted that spot for 5 days and he came in for one day.
That's what I felt like. I mean, I know I'm not a good elk hunter. I'm proficient at getting around the backcountry and understanding stuff people tell me and trying to execute it in the field. But I was still banking on that if I just worked really hard for 7 days, I'd get lucky, if nothing else. You know what I mean? I mean, because every time you pop over one of these little ridges, you know, at about 30 minutes before dark, you're like, this is the time we're about to get lucky. Slap Bear on the shoulder and say, "Get, be ready, buddy." And you pop over the ridge and, like, why isn't there a, you know, a raghorn bull feeding down there with a cow at, you know, 50 yards? It just didn't happen.
Well, the frustrating part is, you know, somebody else might come up here tomorrow while you're here, or the next day, or Thursday, or Friday, or Saturday, and to walk on the exact same ridge where you were today, do the exact same thing that you did in the exact same proficiency, and kill an elk.
Yeah.
And that's where the randomness and the luck and all those other factors come into play.
And that's where just endurance and persistence ultimately end up winning.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I told you earlier today, in all my hunting where I have been successful, it's not necessarily that I was good, it's just that I lasted longer than some of other people.
Yeah.
And they might say, "Man, Clay was a good hunter," and I'd be like, "Well, I just lasted a little bit longer." What do you guys think? Well, Joe, you're the editor of Peterson's Hunting. You need to have the answers. What do you think?
I totally agree. It's time in the field. If you are able, like, I would love to stay here for 5 more days and grind this out until there's a bull on the ground. You know, and do I know that there'd be a bull on the ground in 5 days? No. But do I know that I would walk 20 miles every day and work really hard at it? Yeah. And as long as you're in the field, you're learning these animals, you're understanding their behaviors and, like, the terrain that you're working with and the funky wind that we keep getting. When you're in the field and you're working with it and you're learning it and you spend the time necessary, that's when you find that success. Because it's all about spending the time that you need to be out there.
Yeah.
And I mean, for us, we're lucky because we could go back to Bozeman and come back out here next weekend
right. If
we wanted to, which gives us the opportunity to learn it in stints throughout the season instead of we have to come here and sit here for 15 days and learn it all at once.
Yeah.
Well, just imagine if you came out here every year and you knew where the elk were and you walked over there and killed one every time. That would be a completely different experience. It wouldn't be near as enjoyable as it is having to grind it out. It just wouldn't be.
I'd say it's also pretty tough if you're saying, I mean, if you say, "Hey, you only have 7 days to hunt elk, and that is how your season is going to go." I've killed elk, but I've also spent a heck of a lot more than 7 days.
How many days did you
hunt
last year, Bryce, for elk?
I usually only work like 3 days a week, and I probably hunted almost every day off from September to November, and ended up killing a big bull last week a season with my rifle.
Didn't you say it was like 50-something days?
I don't know about 50, but it was a lot of days. Okay. I put in a lot of work for that bull,
and
had a lot of opportunities, messed up on a lot of opportunities, but I put in a lot more than 7 days in the season to get that bull on the ground.
Yeah.
So I think to only have 7 days doesn't make it any easier, and doesn't make it any less frustrating.
Yeah. You know, I want to tell you something that I observed about all of you guys that it did not surprise me, but I'm kind of learning how generous all you guys were, all of you, with, you know, kind of this elk camp philosophy. Like, Bryce came in and he didn't know us either. And I mean, he was sharing his spots, and you did a great job of articulating, you know, just what you thought the elk were doing, and you just kind of, I appreciated that, and just sharing spots. And not that I mean, when I'm hunting with somebody, I'm not withholding information from them. I'm not saying that, but when you're elk hunting, I don't know, it's different than whitetail hunting. If this was a whitetail camp back, you know, in wherever in the Midwest, you know, you almost have to do it solo. Like, if you're tree stand hunting, it's like, this guy's going here, this guy's going here. But with elk hunting, a lot of times it's better to be in teams for calling purposes, for, honestly, I think a lot of it is for mental purposes. I think having a buddy there that you can enjoy the experience with helps you grind a little bit harder. I mean, yeah, I've been analyzing definitely. This. It's like, why are they going together? Why don't they split up? I think you go together because you like it. Because you enjoy being together, you enjoy hunting together, and probably you can do better as a team And I realize the calling aspects of a team. You know, you put somebody up front and somebody further back. But no, just like with, I mean, all you guys, like y'all were putting me out front a lot of times.
You drove a lot further than we did.
Well, and that's I appreciate that. I truly do. But I like that aspect of it. So much of the hunting that I do, it's kind of solo, you know. And even like bear hunting, like on a spring bear hunt, like if this were a spring bear camp, we wouldn't be hunting together. I mean, it'd be like you go to that drainage, you go to that drainage, but elk hunting kind of has a neat thing about it, which maybe is so normal to you guys. But and Ben is just, you know, the last couple of days he's just been like, Clay, you ought to come with me, and so I'll go, and it's been good. I've been learning a ton from Ben. So
I like hunting with Pete. I'm not a solo hunter. There's a lot of people that like to be by themselves, that like to go out. I'm just not. I could explain it in a lot of ways, but I just like, you know, I like being with other people and sharing that knowledge. And I just, that gets me out of bed more than going out by myself and being alone and catching the solitude. That's not something I need from hunting.
I was trying to describe this earlier. I love people. I love being around people. I enjoy other people's success. Like, I think that's a big part of being a good human is doing that. But when it comes to hunting, I usually find myself like gravitating towards isolation in actual hunting. Like, and that doesn't mean I'm not sharing spots. It doesn't mean I don't think it translates necessarily to being stingy or something, but like, it's like, you go that way, I'll go this way. I could tell that, Ben, that like, you didn't want me to go with you to help you because I didn't have anything to offer. And I knew you wanted to kill an elk, and I knew that if I went with you, there was probably a fair chance that I'd be the one shooting. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to push that on you. But our time together was valuable. I learned a ton from you. I wish I could have hunted with you guys a little bit more. Or at all. I mean, I heard your stories and heard your commentary on your hunts, which was really valuable to me. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think for sure when you think about elk hunting, tactically it's better to have someone else there. So you can have a caller, you can have somebody to be stomping around in the background, raking trees, doing anything it takes to get that elk all the way in there. I mean, that is absolutely tactically an advantage that you would want. And so, those two things combined, you're like, you might as well just do it. And certainly being able to, if you want to get to know somebody and you value them, go in the woods with them. And if you start arguing over stuff and you start not, one person wants to drive the conversation, the other person doesn't want to listen, or vice versa, somebody's a follower, somebody's a leader. If you really want to get to know somebody, and whether you could be friends with them or you want to spend time around them, take them out in the woods, take them out elk hunting. Because one person's going to want to go up the ridge, one person's going to go down, one person might want to be cautious, one person might want to run in. It's a good way to really, you know, suss out how much you can stand each other, yeah, for sure.
Test the capacities of your relationship.
It really is, yeah, man. And that's not the reason you do it, but that's something you find out about yourself. You know, how can you communicate with another person in these often tense situations?
Yeah.
And also, I don't feel like I'm being giving by bringing someone along that's probably going to shoot the elk, and I'm probably not. I want to see an elk die. I've never called in an elk for another person. I've called in elk and never gotten shots, but I've never called in an elk that someone that has run in and been shot by someone else. And I would value that as much as I would a dead bull by my arrow.
100%. Yeah. I think it's the same as if Joe would have shot a bull next to me, I would have been just as excited for him than I would be if I would have shot it. And I know that Joe would feel the same way, and that's why it's fun to hunt.
Yeah,
together. Man, that right there is the qualifying factor for people that you want to hunt with.
I don't want to hunt with someone that if I shoot something, they're pissed off and run in the other direction and say that should have been mine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you always find that with duck hunting. When you're there's four people in a blind and a bunch of ducks come in and you shoot two, and then somebody's like, I got that one, I got that one. I'm like, we got up some ducks! man. Yeah. It doesn't matter who got the ducks. It matters that the ducks are on the ground. Let's shoot our limit and we'll divide them up. Yeah. That's how it often happens in that situation. There's no way to know who shot what in some of those volleys. But it's the same here. Five of us or four of us with tags here in this tent, one of us shooting a bull, to me would have been, I would have probably told the story like it was me. I'd been like, you know, there was Clay, and he was. I would have told it like it was me, and been. I wouldn't have been like, oh yeah, buddy in camp got one. I would have told the story as if
our camp got one.
Our camp got our team got one.
Yeah,
our camp got one.
Yeah,
that's what matters.
Instead, we have a broken ant.
I'm gonna say our team got a broken ant.
We had our spirits broken. But, no, it this whole experience has been super valuable, whether any of us killed an elk or not. I think we all came in here with expectations that we would do better than we did, probably.
I think you always do, right?
You got to.
Yeah, you have to come in thinking that you're going to find the success, or what's the point in going if you know you're not going to kill something?
Right.
Yeah. We had our, I mean, I couldn't ask for any more. I had a shot. I was the only one that.
Yeah,
that had that, but I had a shot, and it was 100% on me
Ben
missing.
Ben could have killed a cow.
Yeah,
Joe could have killed like 10 cows and a couple of velvet spikes.
Okay, well, see, now
I had probably the best shot of the trip. Like, I could have killed that 320 bolt. You know, I had him dead to rights, except Bryce's head was in the way.
Okay, yeah, that's right. So
he was wondering that he was wondering why I wasn't shooting, and I had an arrow knocked, but wasn't at full draw because he was just below this little bluff, and I knew he was somewhere around there, but I couldn't see him, and Joe was about 10 yards behind me, higher up. So, from his perspective, I have this 6x6 bull, probably about 320, at 15 yards, standing perfectly broadside, and I'm not drawing my bow.
Yeah, and I mean, he stood there for, it seemed like forever. It was probably 45 seconds, but it was long enough. So, like, when he first got bumped, like, I saw the antlers, cow called to him, he stopped perfectly. And, like, he didn't get our wind or anything. Like, he just stopped, looked back, and, like, he stopped in the perfect spot where his view was kind of hidden by a tree, so he stayed longer. And I had time enough to pull my rangefinder out of its pouch, range him, 25, put it back in, knock an arrow for myself, and look back at Bryce and go, why isn't he shooting?
And the whole time I'm wondering why Joe isn't shooting, because I know I can't see him, and I don't want to move out and bump him, because I figured Joe has a shot, but Joe was he was taking safety.
Yeah, I would have had to put my pin like right next to Bryce's head, maybe like a couple inches off to the left. So I figured that wasn't, you know, a good shot to take, but...
When you start talking about all the chances that we had, you know, and I had one fair opportunity at cows and some spikes, and I didn't push it. I felt like I could have got within bow range of them. You know, it was that morning I stalked down. And I think the closest I got was 128 yards, but we were intentionally staying back because we felt like there was a bull going to be coming any second. Had I targeted that elk, which I would today. Like today, if I see a cow elk, I mean, I'm like going after it like it's a Boone and Crockett bull. You know, I feel like I could have got within bow range of those elk. So, boy, it's not been for lack of seeing animals.
Lots of opportunity and lots of effort.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what more can you ask of a hunting camp than that? Lots of opportunity and lots of effort.
Yeah, the opportunity thing is important because I've been in places where, you know, even traveling, talk about like transient hunting, like going to an outfitter. I went to Newfoundland, and the outfitter said, what do you want to do after you kill your moose? I said, well, don't talk to me like that. How dare you? Are you guaranteeing me I kill a moose? He's like, well, we normally get a good bull in the first 2 or 3 days, and you're going to want to, do you want to canoe in the lake or fish? Just start thinking about kind of the things you want to do with your free time once you kill your moose. I thought, wow. This is the worst thing an outfitter's ever said to me, ever. Because setting that expectation is foolish. You know, it's just foolish. You want to say, we're going to hunt really hard. There's a lot of moose around. We know where they are. We'll do our best. The rest are up to you and the moose. He didn't say that. And I hunted for 7 or 8 days total we hunted and didn't see a moose. Lock eyes on a single hair on a moose. And, you know, you realize at that moment, like, those were false expectations. The expectation should be get out there, hunt hard. Have a good opportunity. I mean, we had opportunities. If we could figure these elk out and you had time and you got or luck on your side, you could kill a giant elk here. And not one that you probably wouldn't see in many other places in the state of Montana that you can draw fairly frequently, you know.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. I mean, that alone is enough to draw you here and keep you here for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, you're definitely not going to kill a small one because they're just not here.
There, I haven't seen a small elk the entire week.
They go from velvet spikes to like 320.
There's a velvet spike and when they're a 7x7.
When Bryce and Joe didn't get that one, didn't Bryce say, well, that's the smallest one we've
seen. That's the smallest one we've seen.
Well, honestly, I thought he didn't want to shoot it. When he was just standing there, I was kind of like, that there's no way he's passing on this bull.
Bryce.
That's
Bryce,
what I did, guys. I had it there, and it was, I only wanted to shoot a 7x7.
He's like, I already missed a 7x7. Yeah. There's no way I could downgrade.
We can't have Bryce on here without, I've been giving Bryce a hard time this whole week. Well, first of all, because I didn't know your name until, your last name until yesterday.
Yeah.
So we went 6 days, and I didn't know your last name.
On
purpose. I liked that we were friends, and we were joining together in this pursuit of big game solely because we just were elk hunters. We're elk hunters. I don't need to know your last name. Bryce was such a good dude, though, that anytime anything bad would happen, we would blame it on him because clearly it wasn't his fault. And so every time when he sent me in one day, well, Joe did too, but being Joe'd doesn't roll off the tongue as good as being Bryced.
Yeah, being Farinato doesn't.
Yeah.
That's so, way worse.
So one day they had spotted this big bull and seen where he bedded, and they were like, hey, why don't you and Clay go in there this afternoon? And we were like, really? You're going to send us in on that bull? They're like, yeah, we just want to go somewhere else. So we went in there. We never saw a bull. We never saw an elk. And on the way out, I was like, we've been Bryced.
He was actually on the next ridge over. We just snuck around to that ridge.
I was like, they spooked all the guy here. They're like, you should go over there. Because we were a little bit surprised that they would send us into the spot where they had just been on these big bulls.
Well, so every time this week anything hasn't gone right, we've been like, We've been Bryced.
God, we got Bryced. It's over.
I'll be the scapegoat. That's fine, man.
Yeah. That's funny.
Somebody asked.
And we were bugling over here. The people wouldn't be able to see. Bryce is pretty fit elk hunter. So is Joe. Bryce, you got a reputation in this camp of being able to, you know, charge the bugle, get after them, pound the dirt. We were bugling a few days ago, just kind of practicing, Ben and I, just midday. And we were like, what if Bryce just came running across the drainage?
I said, he would probably jump across the drainage.
We envisioned Bryce like running and jumping across the whole drainage. And then
landing.
Realizing that bugle was us.
Like, he's going to be mad at us. He's gonna be mad. We can't outrun him.
Yeah. Bear, what do you think? You think we should come back here or should we go back to Colorado?
We should definitely come back here.
You think so?
We only saw two elk in Colorado and didn't hear a single bugle.
I had to bring two. Okay, we're you know, filming some of this hunt and stuff, and I had to bring two cameramen. So they've been alternating. Colby and Bear have been alternating, and so I'll wear one out in the morning and then wear one out in the evening. And we've been flipping back and forth. Do y'all think we need to bring three people next year? Or are y'all good?
No, we're good.
We're good. We need to bring more because I'm gonna get a tag next year.
Yeah. Hey. Okay.
Yeah.
For real.
Yeah.
Bear, I'm going to ask Bear and then Colby, what just your full commentary on this hunt. Like, Bear, you've kind of been like camp sidekick. Was it worth it? Are you ready to go home?
I think that we got to kill an elk before we go home because, I mean, we drove 21 hours up here and it's a lot better elk hunting than what we did in Colorado.
Yeah.
Because in Colorado, we rode 40 miles in a week. And didn't hear a single bugle and saw two elk.
Yeah.
And
we didn't even have a dream.
Yeah, we didn't.
Holding the broken horn again.
Yeah.
This is our Montana broken dream, which we actually have something in hand.
Every September, you guys hold that together.
Here. Hold this.
It's like a wishbone.
It's a wishbone.
If you ever break it.
But that's the best attitude of an elk hunter right there. We're staying here till we kill
something. Well, hey, just now, everybody's leaving except for us. And I told Bear, I said, hey, how about we just leave this afternoon with these guys? And he looked at me and he said, I thought we were going to kill an elk. He said, we need to keep hunting. So he meant that. He was like, we need to stay. And I said, so you're not ready to go home? And he's like, no. So we're going to stay. We're going to hunt tonight, tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
You guys got more water, more food?
Yeah,
now.
y'all charged us up. We took water. We took Ben's bread. We took your quinoa, whatever. Man, those were good burritos, bro. Mm-hmm. I'm going to cook some of that. Mm. Joe, I'm sure you gave us something that we don't know about.
I think I gave you some ground meat.
Okay, you did. I knew you did. You gave us some buffalo.
Yep.
Archery mm-hmm. killed buffalo.
Yep.
That's valuable to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Colby, thoughts?
Yeah. No, this has been great.
What do you think about these guys?
Oh, it's been great. I mean, just at camp and, you know, when you can just come in and give each other a hard time instantly, it's like, hey, what's up, bro? You know, like, it's just there's a camaraderie that just comes with being in the outdoors and knowing that everybody's willing to grind and do whatever, whether you have a tag or not. And, I mean, I know for me and Bear, it's like whoever goes or whoever stays is, you know, we'll have a good time. It'll be good. And then you're looking forward to people coming in and, like, even just being willing to contribute, like, Bear cooked one night, I cooked one night, you know, just filling in whatever needs to be done, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not just us. I mean, everybody's done some sort of support thing for everyone else at one time or another. And so I think that's really, like, the valuable experience is the relationships you get inside of these places. It's where you start to see people's true character. And, I mean, ultimate defeat and still, like, ready to go. I mean, Bryce called me whenever he missed his bull, and he was, like, real frustrated, but it was like he was ready to charge forward to the next one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I was telling you guys, you need to move camp and get out of here because we've got a bunch of elk over here to kill.
He's like, I just got defeated, but you guys should totally come here.
Yeah.
And
he was like, get over here, man.
Yeah.
And you know what I said when Colby said that? I didn't realize how many elk were over here, but I was like, man, we're not going to go over there and hunt Bryce's elk. I mean, like, I figured there was, like, one drainage with elk. But I just, it was generous of you. And I mean, we would have done the same thing for you.
Yeah.
But it was generous. And that's when Colby said, we don't even know this guy's last name.
Yeah.
He said, we're going wherever he says go.
Yeah, I know. Like, 2 days in, I was like, I don't even know his last name. And if he told me, Clay, clean up camp and then go up and water the horses.
You didn't even
I
know.
I just would have done it.
You didn't even know if it was the right Bryce.
Yeah, there was a time when we thought Bryce was at the wrong camp.
Yeah.
But Bryce actually didn't even know Joe.
I actually live out here. I just go camp to camp.
What do they call it? The guys that wedding crasher? You're an elk camp crasher?
Yeah,
you're just going to go down the road to some other guys and just pull up and just be like, hey, guys, what's for dinner?
I should have given you guys more bad advice.
You're like, hey, I know. You're like, he knows Joe. Yeah. You're like, yeah, Joe, sure, I know. Joe? Yeah.
Yeah, I usually go with Joe or Tommy.
Yeah. Joe was doing that with the locals the other day. You know the Bell family? Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. I didn't realize I knew that many people in Montana.
Small town Montana still exists.
Yeah.
Still exists.
Yeah.
Small world.
Well, it's been a pleasure to hunt with you guys. Thank you, Joe, for hooking us. Man, Joe, of all people, has been super. When I met Joe a year ago, he was like, come elk hunting, man. I'll take you elk hunting. And I could tell he meant it. A lot of people say that, but I could tell he meant it. And so I did what he said. He said, put in for this tag. I said, okay. And here we are. So really, Joe, appreciate it, man.
Of course. Sorry I have to take off today. I should have driven myself. I would have stayed, but.
Nah.
You I'm glad you made it up.
Go back to Arkansas with him.
Yeah. I should. I've always wanted to go to Arkansas.
So. Come on down.
You got to open our bear season.
Exactly.
Yeah, get down there.
Camp with me and James Lawrence.
But no, I'm really glad you guys made it up.
I'm
glad we got into elk and had that experience. Because, I mean, it's never guaranteed that you're going to take one home, but being able to be in them and have an experience where you're running around with these amazing creatures is always worth it.
Yeah.
In my book.
Yeah. I'm anxious to get back to see really how strong my legs got this last week.
Mm.
I've been running. I've been, you know, I have to work pretty hard to stay fit at my old age. And so I kind of knew my fitness level. And we hadn't probably walked as much as you guys, but we walked a lot. I mean, every day I've been walking to the bottom and back up and about three of these bumps over
multiple
every
times
day.
A day.
Yeah. So it grinds on you.
We did a little running. Yeah, we did a little hustling today after that bull.
Yeah.
So, I mean, You know, it's yeah, it grinds on you. And getting up in the morning, it's, yeah, I'm sure other folks have gotten up in the morning and you just kind of open your eyes like, nah, come on, this ain't going to work. Just go right to sleep. Just a couple more hours of sleep.
It's always fine. Easy the first, like, 2 days,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And day six.
That first bull that bugled when Bryce and I left you that first morning, and we take off after it. I got to the top of the ridge and I looked at Bryce and I was like, breathing kind of heavy. I was like, man, I forgot what it was like to hunt with somebody who runs up the mountain. Yeah. It was like huffing and puffing, but it sure is fun.
Yeah,
sure,
I don't really want to go back to civilization.
I don't either.
You know, we were talking today, Ben brought up kind of the sequence of how this feels to be in a camp. You know, he said it takes about 2 days to kind of settle in and kind of let the civilized world kind of drift from your consciousness. Not that you're not conscious of family at all times and communicating with family when you can and stuff, but that seems to be a pretty good assessment, Ben.
Yeah. No, I've always thought that since I've done some like real backcountry hunts where you're out of service for 10 days and you get dropped off by a float plane or something. In this case, I was watching football in my truck taking a nap yesterday, so civilization being what it is.
Yeah.
But it's still the same thing in terms of the mentality. You gotta like slough off society. You gotta, you know, there's no couch to sit on. There's no TV to watch. There's, your responsibilities are different, and you have to kind of find the rhythm of the elk and the mountain and the place you're in, and you have to follow that rhythm. You sleep when they sleep. You know, you sleep when they sleep. You bed down in the afternoon when they do, and you're up and moving when they are. And that's a rhythm you have to find. And the first mountain you climb seems like, wow, this is a little harder than I thought. The fifth or sixth one you climb, your mentality is like, you now know kind of what the rhythm needs to be and how quickly you need to move and where you need to end up. And so for me, it's always been, it takes the first couple of days, you feel like you're just kind of working it out.
Yeah.
Kind of physically and mentally getting yourself to a place where you no longer worry about anything other than the elk and finding that rhythm.
I think that's a pretty unique experience to hunters that even people that there would be some extreme backpackers and hikers and mountaineers and stuff that would experience long stints in the wilderness where you really truly have time to get disconnected. But for the most part, it's hunters that are doing that, you know, I'm saying for 7 to 10 days, be out and away. And, nobody's taking their tent and going out with their family of five and camping for 10 days on the mountain over there just to have fun.
And waking up an hour before sunrise.
You know what I'm saying?
Hiking yeah. 4 miles and running down mountains. Yeah, so, I mean, my wife, the moment I always know that I've done it right was when I go home and my wife smells me when I walk in the door from like across the room in the kitchen. She just goes, take a shower.
Don't touch me. Take a shower first.
Yeah, she seems to be able to smell me well before I even maybe walk in the house sometimes.
I think there's got to be something healthy about like not bathing for a week.
I think I like it. I mean, like I was telling you the other day, I feel better and more comfortable and more in my element here. Whether it is, did you hear a bugle there, Joe?
Or a mule.
A mule. Every time I hear the mule, I feel like it's a bugle.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I heard something.
So many digressions. We've decided that mules got the short end of the stick from a horse whinny. They also got the short end of the stick from a donkey bray.
Yeah.
But they actually sound more like an elk because they kind of combine the two. Go ahead,
a little
Ben.
Bit too.
Sorry.
No, I'm
saying dirty.
There are things I worry about in my day to day life when I'm at work or at home with the kids or with my family that I just forget about here. You know, cleanliness being, I just like brush my hair aside and go on.
And Ben, I wasn't going to say anything, but you look bad.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's what I was hoping compliment. For. Yeah, I was hoping to look gnarly.
Bear always smells, though.
He's a 14-year-old kid. Like that's the smelliest time of a young man's life, I say. But yeah, I mean, that's something I've always thought, and it always reaffirms. And there's been times, this won't be one of them, but where I've been out for 7 to 10 days and haven't had service at all. You know, you have your inReach and you text the people, just let them know what's up and give them those updates. And then the anxiety and the nerves when you know that phone's about to come on, when you know the moment of service and you get that feeling of the wave of connectivity and all the things that come with it. That's a difficult thing for me personally to do a lot of times. And even here where we have some connectivity in camp, it's more just going back to that rhythm and missing this one. Because this one is much more natural to me.
Yeah. Yep. Well, hey, thanks a ton, guys. Really, to every one of you. Thank you for your helping us have a successful hunt. Really yeah. was a successful hunt. And thank you for your generosity. Thank you for your encouragement, wisdom. Really appreciate it. And, man, I want to do it again.
Mm. Doggone it. What other thing would you – this is.
I started off this podcast
I'm not
thinking,
doing it again.
Yeah, thinking
what,
that.
What other thing
we're
would
done,
you
– We're done, Mayor. We're done.
You would
done.
Say, I'm frustrated. I don't know how to – like, I'm frustrated and I'm mad about this and I've failed. But please come next time.
Yeah. You know, I'm always amazed at the resiliency of the human spirit. When I – there's a place I hunt in Arkansas that's pretty tough for our world. And it is miserable hunting there. And I will be coming down that mountain in the dark after not seeing a game animal in 3 days and being like, why don't I drive 3 hours north into Kansas, into the best whitetail hunting in the world? Why do I drive the other way into the worst whitetail hunting probably in the country? And as soon as I get in the truck and the mule's in the trailer and the heater's on, if it's cold, or the AC's on if it's hot, and I start driving, it takes about a mile on pavement for me to be planning my trip back up the mountain. At times, I have been just shocked by that. And it's not me. It's all of us.
I get it. You go to the grind,
and then you're just like, golly, this is the stupidest thing I've ever done.
I have my favorite analogy for this. Joe might have heard it possibly before, but I call that sharpening the life knife. Because, like, yeah. you come up here, man, and you, like, you're solving problems every second. The elk hunting is one big problem-solving thing, and it's incredibly difficult to do. And there's all these elements that you have to have studied and practiced and crafted and be good at. Not only, you know, shooting a bow, but butchering an animal and all the things that go with it. And when you leave here, sitting in traffic seems like a smooth, no problem experience. And that's because this place, these places make you sharper, make you tougher. They make it easier to take on the other things in life that now seem so much more trivial than actually finding a giant bull elk, getting close to it, convincing it to come close to you, and then finding a lane to put an arrow through and getting the arrow through the right spot, and then finding it when it runs down the mountain, and then picking up its giant hunks of meat and carrying it back to wherever you came from. Like, that, the difficulty of that makes too many emails seem like, well, that's nothing. Yeah. So you sharpen that old life knife, you feel mm-hmm. much more dull when you haven't done something like this for a long mm-hmm. time.
That's a good analogy. Life knife. Bear, what are you holding there?
What is Bench that? Made knife.
Who gave that to you?
Ben O'Brien gave that to me.
Oh, wow. Nice. Let me see that.
I told him not to cut himself with it. I didn't.
That is a sweet knife.
I didn't want to. Brand new. Never sliced a thing.
Well, I know you said thank you to him.
I did.
Yeah. Beautiful knife. Cool. All right, guys. Closing thoughts?
I'm just happy we were here. I'm already planning my trip back.
I was just texting somebody like, hey, man.
We're coming.
I got a few days off next week.
Yeah. I'm thirsty. I want to kill an elk. I want to come back. I want to do this and keep doing it. And whoever wants to come is always welcome. But I'm ravenous right now for all the experiences and the end result.
Right on.
I'm planning my workouts.
Hey, you did good. Hey, guys, Colby worked hard for this.
He did awesome.
He has, man. For the last year. He really has. He's worked hard, and he's been following us around.
Yeah, man. I told Colby when we were out there, I said, this is hard. I mean, I don't know what percentage of people that could actually do this and keep up with, you know, us running around, but it is not an expansive percentage. It is a low percentage of people that would come out here and immediately be able to get up and down this place. I mean, it is incredibly difficult in almost every way. Yeah. So,
especially not having a tag. You know, having a tag,
exactly.
You're moving a little quicker after that bull and up that mountain.
Yeah,
but
it's true. Very true.
Yeah, have a little more motivation to keep.
Yeah,
keep putting a foot in front of the other one.
Keep grinding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Bear and Colby. So, all right, guys. Well, keep the wild places wild, because that's where the elk live.